it is possible to have conversations, sometimes difficult conversations, with people who think differently than you, and be able to have those conversations gracefully, gently, calmly, to allow space for people to bring the full expression of who they are into the conversation. And it's where we learn from each other. It's how we grow together. But then, you know, and then part friends. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of A Place in the Conversation. Very glad to have you join us today. My name is Dan Nyslunger. I'm the spiritual formation catalyst for A Place in the Conversation. And I'm really looking forward to our conversation today. We're joined by two very special guests, special friends. And Nick is here with me. So, Nick, you know, weather's kind of turned. It's turned to fall. What's your favorite part of fall, Nick?
I think the color of the leaves and the shorter days and the cooler weather.
Yeah.
And just sort of putting things to rest.
Yeah, that's kind of neat. You know, I was out walking the other day, and as I was walking, you could feel, you could hear, and you could feel the sound of dry leaves as you walked down. And there's just something about that that is, I was kind of taken aback for a moment because I was out with family and we were spending time together, and I found myself kind of forgetting about them for a minute and just shuffling in the leaves and listening to the rustling of the leaves underneath my feet and the smell that was kicking up. It's kind of a special thing. Yeah. And so I really enjoy this time of year.
It takes you back.
It does. Yeah, it did. Exactly. Yeah. It did. It took me back. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's it. It also reminded me I need to rake my leaves, but it did take me back, which was cool. So we're joined today by Reverend Annalee Coringle from Unionville Presbyterian Church and Father Chris Rogers. And we are very, very lucky to have the two of them join us. One of the things that A Place in the Conversation really aims to do, one of our primary goals, is to help people understand that it is possible to have conversations, sometimes difficult conversations, with people who think differently than you, and be able to have those conversations gracefully, gently, calmly, to allow space for people to bring the full expression of who they are into the conversation. And it's where we learn from each other. It's how we grow together. But then, you know, and then part friends, even though we may not share every single thing in common. And so much in our world today, as we watch what's moving and what's taking place, we see evidence of people unable to have those kind of conversations. Where we retreat to spend time with those who think exactly like we do, especially around some of the social issues in our world today. And if you don't think like me, and if you don't believe like me, well, then I have no time for you. And I really don't want to spend time talking with you. I might talk at you, to try to convince you, to sway you to believe like I believe, but I'm not really going to talk with you. And there's a difference between talking with and talking at. And so my two good friends, Father Rogers and Pastor Annalee, are going to help us model what it means to have a very, very healthy conversation about a topic in our world today, which can be very divisive. And so we're going to be talking about LGBTQ issues, and we're going to be talking about ministry in that arena and what that looks like. And so I hope you're blessed by it. I know that I'm blessed by every time I'm with both of these people. And Father Rogers, I want you to take a moment and introduce yourself. But before you do that, I want to share, you know, I was this past Sunday, I was at Bethel AME Church. They had their family and friends service. Yeah. And as I was there, I shared some words. And one of the things I talked about is the fact that that's where you and I met way back in 2014. You know, I was new to the community. You were relatively new to the community. And you and I met there as a part of that service. We weren't participating in it. We were just attending it. And just since then, we've just had great kind of partnership in ministry and have done some exciting things together. And so I just appreciate you. You were brought to mind as I was in that church. And so just thank you for all that. So would you just take a moment and introduce yourself?
Sure. Yeah, that's a happy memory, Dan. And I remember that well, too. I think I was a week here in Kennett Square. I was ordained a priest in 2000 for the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, which basically is the Philadelphia County and then the five surrounding counties of Philadelphia. I came here to Kennett Square after spending 5 years as chaplain and director of campus ministry at Immaculata University, working with young people. And this was my first experience of being a pastor. And in that year, when I first came, actually in the very first week, we had just witnessed in the country the murder of people in a Bible study at an AME church down in, I believe it was in Georgia. And I saw this invite to come to this prayer service. And that was the time we met. Yeah. And I was just a week in town. I didn't know where everything was. But it's been a joy. I've been here now for 8 years, and the friendships and things that we're part of here have really been a blessing. So been here as a pastor for 8 years, pastor of St. Patrick's. But in addition to that, I serve the Archdiocese in a couple other different roles. I'm an adjunct spiritual director for some of our seminarians at St. Charles Borromeo. I am chaplain of the Courage Apostolate, which we'll talk about here today. And just 3 months ago, I was named actually by Pope Francis as a missionary of mercy for the church here in Philadelphia. And I'm still learning what exactly that means. But it's been a great joy being here. My time in Kennett Square is my full-time job, and meeting the people and being part of the conversation as we are here today has been a blessing.
Thank you. Anna Lee, would you introduce yourself?
I'm Reverend Anna Lee Korngel. I pastor Unionville Presbyterian Church. I've been there since 2012. I also serve as a police chaplain for six different local police departments, and I live in Westchester, and I have three kids and three dogs, and love the community stuff. I've really enjoyed working with Chris and with you. One of my favorite things all year long is the community Thanksgiving service, which we do, which is where I first met Chris. But over the years, I've just really enjoyed Chris and working with him. And in ways that I didn't work with his predecessor, I just feel like this has been such a blessing to have this ministerium and these relationships and true friendships that I count on.
Yeah. And we're coming into this season of the year, which is like right in your wheelhouse. Like we're coming into Advent. And we're going to take a second and explain to people what Advent, what the Christmas season looks like in your house.
So my last name is commonly mispronounced as Kringle, which is fine with me. I was born on December 22nd. I like fall because I know that means winter's coming. Winter's my favorite time of year. My house is three stories. It's an old Victorian, seven bedrooms, and I put up over 150 Christmas trees. And happy to say that I'm about 80% done. I have to get it done by Thanksgiving so I can focus on church stuff for Advent, but I love my favorite thing in the morning. You talked about the rustling leaves and kicking them around. My favorite thing in the morning is to get up and turn on all the lights of the trees. I love to wake up and turn on all the lights. So very excited.
Good, good. All right. So Father Rogers, would you talk about the ministry that you have with the Carriage Apostolate?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I It was about 10 years ago. I was working at Immaculata University as chaplain, and I was asked to become chaplain of the Courage Apostolate. This is a work within the Catholic Church of a particular work for areas and a ministry toward LGBTQ persons and their families. And I had heard of this work. I had never had any real experience of the work, but I was invited to become a chaplain of it. And what I discovered was that this particular work is a support for those men and women who experience same-sex attraction, who are looking to live a chaste lifestyle. So there's a lot of questions that they have, maybe anxieties, maybe fears. They oftentimes may feel different from their peers, not able to talk about things or find a conversation place, you know, or a safe place in which to speak. And the church, Courage, originated back in 1980 here in New York City. And now today there are these Courage Apostolates, you know, throughout the world within the church, where people with same-sex attraction can find support, friendship, understanding, and assistance in living as a disciple of Christ, coming to a greater clarity and charity, you know, toward themselves, and to receive that, you know, from others. And as you said in the intro, which certainly describes our modern times, like globally, the lack of conversation, the inability to talk with, and so often talking at, these support group type meetings are a place where there is a talking with, in light of the gospel, in light of their own experience, and a place where they find that support, where so often, again, that being with can be lacking.
Yeah, good, all right. And so what do you find to be, as you think about, you know, that ministry that you're a part of, what's the thing that surprised you the most about it? Because you said you entered in and you weren't quite sure what it was. Right. But you were asked to be the chaplain of it, and it's kind of the way, the world works these days. What were you most surprised by?
The humanity of it. I think so often when it comes to homosexuality, there was something in me. It's almost like a lightning rod type conversation. It's not a comfortable conversation for many people. And one of the first things that was so striking to me was that this isn't, you know, simply a political issue or even a religious issue. You know, we're talking about persons here, human beings, you know, fellow men and women. And so the faces and the stories, you know, while I at that time was not familiar with the particular stories, through this ministry, I've gotten to hear the particular stories. And quite frankly, you know, we're all made of the same stuff. We're all human. And there was a great, and there continues to be a great joy and relief in knowing that, okay, this person is not a label and this subject matter is not like a lightning rod, but rather this is a real, sometimes a difficulty, a question, and there is a place where the conversation can be had in that regard. So I would say the humanity of it all was really a particular gift to me, as opposed to a lightning rod, as opposed to just a label. And this is why sometimes in Courage, we use the language of same-sex attraction, as opposed to just the label. Because it can assist in reminding that we're speaking as persons and not labels.
Not labels. Yeah. Good. Thank you. Annalie, would you share a little bit of your story?
So back in, I am a PCUSA, Presbyterian Church USA, and I've been that my whole life. My whole family's been that for as long as I can remember. And my parents, back in the 80s, were both in, not as pastors, but elders, you know, in ruling positions in the church, governing positions in the church, and felt very strongly that the PCUSA should ordain homosexuals, and they fought for that. And then years later, when I was ordained as a minister, or actually as I was in the ordination process, my denomination was again wrestling with that issue of ordaining homosexuals. And I remember my mom saying that, almost apologizing that she hadn't fought hard enough, that it was still something I had to fight. And I love being PCUSA. It's very important to me. But when it looked like we might not pass it, I remember thinking, now where am I going to go? Because I can't be part of a church that doesn't ordain homosexuals. I just can't. For me, luckily, we did pass it. It did become something, you know, become part of our governance. And that was important to me. And then I have children that are gay. I have sons that are gay. And so it was, but even, you know, back in the 80s, before it was even a personal thing for me, I felt that it was important, and that it wasn't a sin, and that it was part of, Lady Gaga said it best, you know, baby, you were born that way. So it was really important to me, and I was really proud of my denomination for doing that. It hasn't always been easy. We did lose members of the church. The denomination lost members. They're, you know, it made some people very upset. But for me personally, I knew I couldn't pastor a church that wasn't inclusive.
Yeah. So Father Rogers, in the work of the carriage apostolate. So what's the goal, right? Because is it
sure
it wouldn't be described as language that some of us are familiar with as like welcoming and affirming, right?
Right. Well, I think it's important to one of the things that we can bring is clarity, and in conversation,
yeah,
clarity can be received. And oftentimes, you know, depending on people's experience or what they hear or who they hear it from, I think it's important to understand that the Catholic Church, we always affirm the human person. It's the actions that can sometimes be a little off, if you will. So in other words, when it comes to homosexuality, homosexuals are as dignified and blessed. There's we love the sinner. We hate the sin, if you will. That is an important distinction that I don't think we always hear. Let alone understand, you know. So the idea that, yes, we're all, Chesterton said, we're all in the same boat and we're all seasick together. We're all part of the same humanity, you know. And that humanity is dignified. Why? Because Christ became a man. And that is like the biggest relief of all. God with us. And Emmanuel, the Christmas theme, you know, this is what we believe as Christians. God with us. So then by definition, every human being created in the image and likeness of God is worthy of dignity and respect. At the same time, we know, if we look in the mirror, that, you know, sometimes I don't always act in a dignified way, you know, in my relations with others, in my relationship with myself, in my relationship with God. And so I think to begin with, like just to acknowledge from the Catholic Church perspective, you know, as far as like inclusivity or acceptance, we accept all people, you know, and we try to assist each other as disciples of Christ to grow in that life of grace, to grow in that life of virtue, which is demonstrated through our charity, through our actions, mm-hmm. If that makes some sense. So just to, because I know sometimes people might think, because the Catholic Church does not accept gay marriage or does not accept, homosexual actions, sometimes it's easy to see that as not accepting homosexuals.
Yeah. So how does, and see, I think that's part of where everybody, well, not everybody, but a lot of us, like we start to draw lines, right? And that's, you know, if you don't see this my way totally, then something's wrong. right? And that's a problem. It's like, because part of me senses, Annalee, that like you would struggle with some of what Chris just shared.
Yes, I have prayed all morning. I really respect Chris and I really like working with him, and he is a friend and a colleague and I care deeply about him. And all day I've prayed from the moment I got up that this is a conversation and not a debate, that I'm not here to win anything. And as a mom, it feels hard to hear my children called sinners for that. I will admit to that feeling hard, hard to hear. But I can understand, so you guys can't see Chris, I can feel the love coming out of Chris right now. And I know that if I started to cry, he would come over and hug me. Like, I can feel that from him. As a mom, it's hard to hear.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I think, I love what Pope Francis says. When he was interviewed.
I do like him.
He just celebrated 10 years as being the Pope. And in his first interview, which was in October of 2013, 10 years ago, he said, he was asked the question, who is Jorge Mario Bergoglio? And he was taken back by that. That was his name before he became Pope Francis. and he was taken back by that. And I remember he said, there's many ways I can answer that question. You know, I'm Argentinian, you know, I was the Cardinal Archbishop of Buenos Aires. You know, he says, but at my core, I'm a sinner who has been looked upon with love. And I remember hearing that, and I like highlighted it and I cut it out. And I think that that really is the beauty of our Christian faith. That really is the beauty of that is the good news, that we are sinners who have been looked upon with love, you know? And we see this over and over in the gospel, but we see it even beyond the gospel in so many of the men and women who have done the same, you know, who have looked upon us with love. And I think then it comes back to these questions that we go back and forth with, like, what is love? Or love is love, you know? And for me, as a Catholic priest, in knowing myself to be a sinner, in working with other people, I go back to that, a sinner who has been looked upon with love. And as I read the scriptures, whether it's, you know, any of the interactions with Jesus, you know, they were all sinners that he was working with, whether it was Peter or Matthew. You know, like, I love it in Matthew's gospel, and he says, you know, they're complaining because he eats with tax collectors and sinners, right? Well, he'd be eating by himself if he weren't eating with tax. His whole mission, his whole saving mission of life and extending the kingdom is to sinners. And over and over again in those individuals who became like heroic men and women, who experienced conversion because of conversation with him, because of engaging his gospel and his way of life, we just see this being played out. And so I see the work of the church, the Catholic Church, of being able to communicate in such a way that is beyond the labels, and to communicate to the whole of humanity because of Christ. And listen, this is difficult stuff.
Yeah.
It really is. I think that needs to be said too. You know, I mean, the gospel is not, you know, some sort of a snake oil, you know, and, you know, live happily ever after. Christ lived happily ever after the cross and suffering, you know, after his mission. You know, so listen, this is difficult, and it's not easy. And the full aspect of what it means, you know, to be a follower of Christ, disciple of Christ, you know, it's demanding.
It's demanding. Yeah.
I have a poem that I keep in my office. Can I read it?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's called Jesus at the Gay Bar. He's here in the midst of it, right at the center of the dance floor, robes hitched up to his knees to make it easy to spin. At some point in the evening, a boy will touch the hem of his robe and beg to be healed, beg to be anything other than this. and Jesus will reach his arms out, sweat damp and weary from dance. He'll cup the boy's face in his hand and say, "My beautiful child, there is nothing in this heart of yours that ever needs to be healed." And I keep that in my office. One of my sons sent that to me, and it was always an important issue to me. It became very different when it became personal.
Yeah. And I think that's important, right? I think, you know, we need to recognize there's like two things at play, right? Where one, we can talk one way about an issue when it's not related to us, when we don't have, you know, there's no connection to, you know, to me personally, to me as a, you know, to my family members, to, so I can talk, you know, with, you know, quote unquote, moral clarity about something I know nothing about. And that's foolishness. And our language often changes whenever all of a sudden something visits our doorstep. And, you know, we're forced to deal with something in a way that we have never had to deal with before. And all of a sudden, the way that we speak about it changes. That's kind of foolish as well. You know, because it's hard to sit in the midst of contradiction, you know, and in the midst of wrestling with some of these deeper issues.
And, you know, again, just like we were joking earlier before we came live, you're a Cubs fan and I'm a Phillies
yes,
fan.
Yes, I am.
You know, and again, I know that sounds silly, but like to your point, Dan, you know, like, and as you opened here, you know, and just the ability to have conversation or even the ability to have difference, you know, we're losing that ability today, you know. Now, I think when it comes, you know, when it does hit home, it's different. It's easy to talk about things on the macro level, you know, what we hear in the news. As soon as we have to start talking about what's happening in my family, that's different. And then furthermore, it's different when it's dealing with like deep things of the heart, and especially things as personal as sexuality.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it really is. Now, we the good news, like, be not afraid. You know, even Jesus was able to speak into things like this. You know, he was in a fallen world. He you know, he spoke with sinners, whether it was Mary Magdalene, whether it was the, you know, woman at the well, or who knows who else, you know, that he spoke with. And to do so with love, to be able to listen.
Yeah.
To be able to listen.
Yeah.
That's I think is a real gift. And it can go a long way, because in our own experience in family, sometimes, you know, once we can listen, then, you know, all of a sudden it becomes less a one-way street and a two-way street.
Yeah. Nick, you have any thoughts, Nick, as you're still listening?
I have a question for Father Rogers.
Sure.
Just for my own clarity, it seems like you're acknowledging that people who have attraction to others of the same sex are born that way.
From a science standpoint, I don't know. I never met someone in my work who consciously chose their homosexuality. I never met someone that way. From a science standpoint, from what I have learned, you know, there has yet to be found, you know, a gay gene.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure where to go with my question.
Yeah, no, that's
cause,
okay.
Because I thought you were going to agree that you did accept that.
Well, even if they are born that way, you know, that does not, that does not, they still have the responsibility, you know, to be able to, you know, love, to be able to navigate, you know, their lives in such a way that it builds up, you know, the kingdom of God.
Well, so I guess I will continue on this line. So you would expect them to be chaste.
Correct.
And in the group that you're working with, I sort of gathered from the way you described it that those were people that you thought were different, but they were coming together to support each other and to get the strength to be chaste. And I guess what I don't see is if people are born that way, why it's wrong for them to express their love through a sexual act.
Sure. Yeah, I think, you know, in the Catholic, sexual love and sexual acts are oriented toward life and love, toward union and procreation. So everyone, regardless of who, is called to chastity. So the heterosexual person who deals with areas of pornography or things mm-hmm. of difficulty, you know, we're all called to be chaste.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the, you know, so again, it's, and chastity, I mean, that sounds like such an old, dusty word that has very little meaning, but basically it's just like temperance, you know, in regards to food or drink.
Which is also an old dusty word.
It is. But, you know, all of our AA friends and alcoholics and all every other 12-step group would know that temperance and right order of a proper relationship in regards to things is really important for a healthy life. Chastity is oriented toward that the proper relationship of our sexual love.
Yes. Well, I'm a biologist, and as a biologist, I certainly agree that the purpose of sex is procreation. Mm-hmm. But I also think that it's an expression, for many people, it's an expression of love. I mean, I think people who have no idea that they're going to have children still express their love that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 And that complementarity of that love. Is very important.
Yeah.
For me, it's, you know, sex is not just for procreation, it's for recreation. I believe my theology includes that our bodies were created for to give and to receive pleasure, and that the sexual act is part of that, not just limiting, not just for procreation.
Yeah. Well, I believe that when a man and a woman come together in sexual act, the two become one. Yeah. That's intercourse.
Oh, right. And I, for me, I really don't want to know about my children's sex lives any more than they want to know about mine.
Exactly.
So I've realized that my parents or my kids are not going to be able to listen to this. But, you know, I want them to have joy and pleasure also.
Yes. So let me ask this question, right? But like, I thank you both, right, for this conversation, right? And I don't know that we're going to fix anything, right? Solve anything, because we don't do that. You can't do that, right? It's what heaven's for. That's right. But the ability to have these kind of conversations and get into some of the deeper kind of things, which with people who, you know, you see that you come at it from a different perspective, you see the world differently. And being able to do it in a graceful, kind, gentle, caring kind of way. You know, Father Rogers, you quoted the Pope a little while ago talking about it was a sinner looked upon
with love.
Say that again. Would you share that quote again?
He described himself as a sinner who has been looked upon with love.
Yeah. And so, like, and that changes. Like, that changes how one moves in the world. Right. And instead of coming and saying, you know, well, I have all the answers. I've got it all figured out.
Right.
I'm the one who is going to share moral authority, you know, with spiritual authority, whatever authority you want to take. I'm going to share the authority and the rest of you just have to receive it and believe it, or I don't want anything to do with you. Like it changes the core of who somebody is and how we move in the world. So, like, there's a part of me that wonders why the church fails to have these kind of conversations like this, because we ought to be the best people at it, right? I mean, because we're talking about holding two contradictory positions, right? And being able to hold them and with an element of grace and allowing the Spirit to work in the midst of the conversation. And it's that's the bedrock of our faith, right? And what I mean by that is, you know, we talk about the person of Jesus, you know, dead and buried. And, you know, we believe that. We also believe Jesus was resurrected. And you just can't get any two polar opposite than dead and buried and resurrected. And you know, that's the core of our faith in many of our churches. And we're comfortable holding that distinction. Like nobody's going around in church and saying, you have to choose. Either he's dead and buried or he's resurrected. No. In our churches, we're comfortable saying, yeah.
Both and. God exists in the both and, not the either or.
Yeah. And then being able to have these, you know, if that's what we believe, it should model how we move in the world. And then, so my question is this, why does the church stink at this? Why as people of faith, why are we so bad at this, at having these conversations? Why do what people think when they think about any kind of issue? What does the church think about? They have an image, and it's either this or that. And when are we going to be able to model and show, man, there's something different?
I think we so often in the church, we want to change you. We're not willing to be changed by you. And those are two very different things. Your congregation is not just mine, but lots of congregations like, oh, we welcome. Please come in. Please come join us. Well, don't drink coffee in our sanctuary. Well, don't wear blue jeans. Don't be this. Don't be that. Like, we're not willing to be changed by the other.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I will admit to that, like, personally, there are times when I'm just like, well, I will debate with Chris all afternoon long, but he is never going to change my mind on this. And I don't know that he's changed my mind on this, but when you talked about like gentle and grace and caring, like that's what I think of when I think of Chris.
Yeah.
When people bring up Father Rogers to me, I think of gentle, I think of grace, and I think of caring.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I think
those of you who can't see, Chris is red as a beet right now. Yeah. And it's good. And it's all good.
It is, you know, and, you know, so often in the scriptures, when like, I think, you know, that both and finds a strange unity in the person of Christ. And it's the person of Christ, it's faith in him. So yes, dead and buried, yes, risen and alive. It's not like an either or. And how? Well, only in him.
Yeah.
In him. And I wonder sometimes when we meet Christ, you know, there was something, those that we do know who met him in the scriptures, so often they went away different. Mm-hmm. They recognized here is an authority different than the authority that we've known. There's something about this one that is unique, you know? And I wonder to myself if in the church, just like in the church of Jesus' day, you know, if we could miss the mark, you know, of what that means. Have we really encountered Christ? And to really encounter him means from within. We're sitting in a room where there's a quote from Augustine, "You have made us for yourself, O Lord. Our heart is restless until it rests in you." Have we really discovered that rest? Hmm. You know, we know the restlessness. And you know what? We can be addicted to our restlessness. We can be uncomfortable with, you know, it's just what we know.
Yeah.
And God is offering, you know, salvation. He's offering himself. He's offering a rest that is beyond our understanding. And I'm not so sure how well on this side of things, you know, we come to accept that or to know that, because it demands an encounter with him in all that is restless.
I think about, you know, as far as the recordings in scripture go, some of the earliest people to have met Jesus, you know, the wise men, the magi, and they went home a different way. They went home changed. And like, beautiful. We think that means like they took a right instead of a left to go home. But like the earliest people encountered Christ and were different. They were, they allowed themselves to be changed by that experience. And I don't know how, like you said, how often we meet Christ and really allow ourselves to live into that change.
Yeah.
And how do we meet Christ in each other, right? In somebody, in the life of somebody whose story is so different than mine, and their background is so different than mine, and everything about their experience is so different than mine. How do I see Christ in that, in them, and then how does that change? How does that change who I am? Like, you know, in the beginning, Father Rogers, you know, you talked about the, as you began your ministry with the carriage apostolate, that it was the stories. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but just tell me if I'm hearing you correctly, is that it was meeting Jesus in these people as they shared their stories.
The humanity of it all.
Yeah. And that's just a powerful thing. Listen, we've spent a lot of time on this. We could spend hours talking about this. Like, I know I could do it with the three of you, you know, forever, because you guys are just a blessing in my life. For those of you who are listening to the podcast, in a few weeks it's going to be Thanksgiving, and you're going to be gathered around a table with family, and chances are everybody in your family doesn't think the exact same way that you do. And chances are very clear, or very, very generous, right, that somebody around that table is going to start to talk about something, is going to start to share about an experience that you're going to feel in the core of your being, that you just want to interrupt them, and you want to tell them why they're wrong, and you want to tell them how you're right, and how you see whatever it is that they're talking about. And there's just so much that we talk about that has become so divisive. I just want to challenge you. When that happens, whether it's this Thanksgiving, whether it's you're in the shop, in the grocery store, whether it's wherever it is, when you start to feel that dwell up from the inside of who you are, that I'm no longer listening, I'm formulating in my mind what I'm going to say to prove them wrong and to help them see things correctly, i.e. my way, squelch it, push it down, and listen to the story. Listen to their story, hear the deeper truth of what they have experienced and how did they arrive at where they are, and just pray for the wisdom to be able to speak with grace and with humility and with gentleness into that. We're not gonna fix things. We're not gonna make everything perfect in this world. But the Spirit, alive and well and working in our lives, certainly can help us move forward. And so Annalee, Chris, just thank you, just a million times over for being willing to be here and share and help us model a little bit about what it means to have a conversation with people who see the world very differently around a particular issue, but can do so, with grace. So thank you very much.
Thanks for having us, Dan. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nick.
Okay, till next time, everybody, just pray that you would experience the Spirit of God alive and well and at work in your world.